Good morning, everyone. This is Sunday, September 10th, 2017. Our subject today is substance, and we will start today with our morning prayer. Janet, go ahead.
Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And then, from miscellaneous writings, we today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. I want to say a few words about the hurricane. I think what we have on our website, and you all should read it if you haven't, we have a few articles dealing with this situation, a couple by Parsons, one in particular about this constant 24/7 pictures of every single move it's making, and he likens it to as if you were watching a disease or something, mass mesmerism. Now, we are grateful for technology and the advances and that we get warnings and alertness, absolutely. But to gaze at this kind of thing for hours is, certainly as a scientist, is totally inadmissible. And you make sure, just as we've just read, we are working sort of like arm wrestling with these storms. They don't have to do what they're predicted to do. So we keep working. And if we do not avoid it entirely, we can lessen it and certainly protect the innocent. So
don't get mesmerized.
So don't get mesmerized. And that's true. I mean, To listen to this last week, between earthquakes, hurricanes, rumors of wars, it would appear to be the latter days. So we must stand our post, our positions, do the work. Parsons' other article on watching is excellent. For people who think they don't know how to watch, just read that. He tells exactly what Esther did in order to defeat Haman, which was about to start genocide on the Jewish people. How she prayed. It took 3 days. 3 days are very significant biblically. But she worked. She fasted. And to fast means to what? In the case of, say, the storm, what would it mean to fast?
That's the material sense of it. In other words, get it out of your thoughts.
Thank you. Entirely get it out of your thought.
Can I read something? I've been working with that. I think it's good about this meteorology and all this stuff by Bicknell Young again.
Yes, thank you.
He says that this is from his 1934 address. He says that set aside the seeming materiality of the earth, and from the standpoint of the divine mind, perceive the spiritual idea. God blesses the earth and everything else for man's sake. That is to say, for your sake and mine. It never produces too much or too little, and it never quakes. For perfection, not meteorology, not geology, is the law of mind to the earth.
Beautiful, thank you. We can put that on our carousel, Jeremy. 1934?
Yes.
All right. Golden text, Proverbs. Oh, before I go any further, I want to assign. Let's see. Okay, Suzanne, next week you are to do our morning prayer for us.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. And you read that very beautifully, Janet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, golden text, Proverbs 3:9. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of thine increase. What does that mean?
For me this week, it meant I had to, it woke me up to remind me that how I'm thinking and behaving and using my time, and especially with God, because they talk about sometimes behind people there's no substance, and I wanted to make sure that behind whatever I was doing, especially for church, had substance of it, the substance of joy, you know, faith, listening to God. It reminded me that it's just not an activity, you know, just working.
Beautiful. Thank you. Some people have trouble with that word substance, so we'll get into it a little more. Jeremy?
I was just thinking about the first fruits and how it's not to leave. Wait for whatever is the remainder to use that for God, you know, your time or whatever, or wait until you retire to work for him or something like that.
Thank you. That is what, in a way, I was looking for that. Your first fruits, not your last, your first.
I think it also means that not after you pay your bills, which is what I used to do. I was so scared that I won't have enough that okay, I paid this, I paid that, and then think about tithing. The tithing comes first.
Thank you very much. That is very true. If you wait till the end, you will have nothing to tithe. You tithe first. I wanted to get into a little bit today what I call the biblical laws of finance. Did you know that at least half of the parables that Jesus wrote about had to do with money? Money is a huge thing. It's a topic some people prefer not to talk about because it's so huge. But it's something we need to talk about.
And what? One of the things that this golden text means, what's been said has been very helpful, very good. One of the things that it means to honor the Lord means to be totally grateful, so grateful to God for being the substance of my being. Doesn't get any better than that, for providing everything that I need. And the way to show your gratitude to God, put it into practice, is to tithe. Because tithing is gratitude. Giving to the church without gratitude is a dead ceremony.
or to do it because you think if you do it, somehow you'll get something in return.
Yeah, it'll
like investment.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right, like a confessional.
Oh, confessional.
Yeah, that's a good example.
But if you're truly grateful to God for being the substance of your being, for providing everything that you ever need, give back. And it'll be the first, not the last, of what you give back.
These are laws, rules, and principles, biblical ones. And those of us here who have done it have found we've always had what?
More than we need.
Yes.
An abundance.
It takes a leap of faith to do it, especially when you think you don't have enough. So I mentioned this story in the forum, but a while ago, years ago really, there was a woman here who came to church who was deeply in debt. And she applied what I call these rules of biblical finance to her life. They were given to her by a practitioner here. The first one was to owe no man nothing except what?
Love them.
To love them. And it's in other places, too, about owing. How many, and you don't have to answer me, but how many of you right now are in debt? The Bible is telling you, no, not to go into debt. So this woman, who was already greatly in debt, she was told that whenever she got her paycheck, once a month, she was to take a small portion of it out to pay her debt. Okay, that was the first. Then, second, she was to take a small portion, whatever she could afford, her tenth. Well, I should say that was first. Her first was tithing, then was her debt. Okay, first she did her tithing for 10%. Then she did her paying her debt, a little bit, whatever she could do. That's what she did. She did it every month. And guess what happened after a period of time? The debt was paid. She also lived within her means. Now, Lillian is a wonderful example of that. She lives within her means. You're not in debt, are you? No. And I know others of you, others have told me. I know there's Bill in Ohio. He says he has no debt. Lillian lives according to her means. She has enough for what she needs, but she's not some lavish spender. And it's a very principled way to live. She does, she makes sure she pays her debts, and she always, I have never known Lillian not to tithe. And any time she has received any kind of a bonus or anything special, she tithes that as well. She is a living example of it. Now, there are a few other things that this person was learning. One, and this was what Mr. Evans used to say. He said, don't nickel and dime your money away. What does that mean? Does anyone know what it means to nickel and dime your money away?
Like you spend it on shopping for coffee every morning.
Good example, right. I mean, if you were trying to live within your means and you have debts to pay, maybe you shouldn't get that extra latte in the morning. When you go to the grocery store, make a list and just buy what you need, because you'll see that beautiful something somewhere that you just think you can't live without. And it's really true. You can very easily spend a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit, and pretty soon you don't know where it went. It's sort of like, you know, when you're trying not to overeat, and yet every time you go into the kitchen, you just take a little bite here, a little bite there. So don't nickel and dime it away. It takes discipline. And then another biblical rule, and this is a very, very important one, is when you'll find you'll pay your debt, you'll end up having more than what you need, plus you'll be learning a lifestyle, a way of living that is disciplined and in accord with science, which is, Mrs. Eddy talks often about economy, then you will have extra. And so what should you do with your extra?
Go back to God.
Well,
share
it. Bless someone else. Charity. And if you do that, you're probably going to get up so much money you don't know what to do with. Because God blesses those who bless his children. So, yes, charity.
Blessed is he who sees his brother's need.
Supplieth it.
Blessed. You are blessed. If we all did this, you know, we wouldn't need all these government agencies to have to pay for everything. If we were real Christians, we would be helping our brother. And then you choose where you want to help. You're not forced to help because the government tells you you have to do this, that, or the next thing. I'm swooping up all your taxes to do this or that. Well, of course, a lot of taxes are necessary, but as far as giving, let your heart's rich overflow. Bless others with it. You know, Mrs. Eddy did. Anyone who reads about Mrs. Eddy, she helped the people in her town. She started locally. She had extra, but how did she start out?
Nothing. She lost everything.
Yes, she had nothing.
But didn't she have less than nothing?
Yep, for a while.
In a way?
She had less than nothing.
You know, I think this, Mary, I think you wrote about this, but the story of David, when he lived the life of a bandit, and then all of his things, the women and children had been taken. And then when they got it all back, he didn't just settle for where he was before it was all taken, okay? But he took what he got back, and then he went and shared it all over the region. And frankly, when I read that, I couldn't figure out why he was doing that, okay? But he'd gotten everything back, and he went and he shared it with lots and lots of people across the region. But actually, it was that sharing that he did that ultimately led to him becoming the king.
Well, as I said, God loves the cheerful giver. God loves those who see their brother's need and supplies it, and you will be blessed by it. It's really a requirement. You cannot just selfishly hoard and take. Which we will get into because that's the story of the talent. But before we do that, the other thing with this woman who came to church, what she was given, and this was one of Mrs. Evans' very favorites, and you should know it. It should be in your arsenal, 2 Kings 25:30. And his allowance was a continual allowance given him of the king, a daily rate for every day, all the days of his life. And Mike discovered what about the king?
Well, I figured out that the king was God, not an orderly king that was helping people.
Yes. Thank you. It is God.
And in science, what does this mean? Continual allowance. What is the principle? What's the principle that meets the need?
The fact that God's allness and abundance?
God is infinite. Good is infinite. Divine mind never stops. It is infinite. There is infinite abundance for every one of us. That's where the continual allowance comes from.
Do you know how much you waste during the day? I mean, you can say, because I know I've thrown out things that I haven't used from the refrigerator, and that's wasteful. But there are other ways. You can waste this class. You know, this is given to you freely, isn't it? You're not paying for this. It's free. If you see it as God's blessing, you will not waste it. You will use it. And if you use it, you will prosper. But if you don't, if you just sit here idly and listen and think, oh, well, that's nice, and now I'll get about my business, you are wasteful. A just one small example.
And what is Malachi 3, verse 8 all about? Will a man rob God?
Yeah, Suzanne, tell us.
Now I forgot what I said.
Did you find it, Linda? It was a good French quote I've liked.
She first said, "I'm the Lord, I change not." That is reassurance that God never sleeps on the job. And then she says, "Even from the days of your fathers, ye are gone away from my ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, wherein shall we return?" And then I think Suzanne quotes, "Here God graciously invites repentance with no blame, but he is met with what? We didn't do anything wrong," or it could be excuses for not having been obedient. Quote, "Will man rob a God? Yet ye have robbed me, but ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings," end quote. In the French Bible, it translates, quote, "Will a man deceive, cheat God?" End quote. Tithes include gratitude, and how many have been down that road of taking all good for granted and not praising and tithing to God?
Thank you. Do you thank God every day for his abundance, for his goodness? Are you seeing it? Are you being down in the mouth and Guam and other things? You're wasting what God has given you, and the lesson says, how can you receive more if what?
Don't use what you have.
Yeah, not only not use it, you don't acknowledge it, you're not grateful for it. All of those things. You think about it during the day, all you have to be grateful for. I want to say something else about Suzanne. She spent, what has it been, like a month, this past month? She's been in deep prayer. She's been reading through Science and Health, chapter by chapter, sharing it with friends. And what has happened to the French website, Aaron?
Oh, it's getting all kinds of views. I think we have as many as 2,500 unique visitors, and they viewed over 6,000 pages.
Now, Suzanne did do nothing except pray. Her thought has been exalted. And because of that, if I be lifted up, what will happen?
Will draw men unto me.
Yes. That's true of everything about this church, everything we do. When we are in an exalted state, when we are grateful, when we are studying the textbook, loving the textbook, I mean, she said how she gives it out because she loves it so much. If you give it out and you don't love it, it won't have that effect. It's her exalted state that is enlivening. If you think, oh, gosh, you know, what I'm doing is not worth anything, nobody's looking at it, nothing's going on, well, then what are you going to have?
More of nothing.
Yeah, how are you going to be attracting anybody? You won't attract a thing. That is no coincidence that that has happened with Suzanne this past month.
That is so beautiful, because I was thinking here that not only was tithing, but was charity and giving, that one should, instead of giving to a quote-unquote charity where there's a huge overhead, if you're giving people as they come along in need, or giving your time to the church, it's a much better way to give charity.
Thank you, Mike. I mean, I have to say, anything that is done or given in this church, believe me, is not wasted. We value everything, every cent you send, every testimony you give,
every remark you make, every forum you write. I know Florence and I are both getting more and more calls and people saying, you know, where have you been? I can't get over your website. This is what I've been looking for. And as we keep shining our light brightly, we will bring in the millennium. It's the truth. How could we not? Sometimes it requires patience. Suzanne could have been, it takes a lot of time to do these translation work. It's a lot of work, and I'm very grateful for all of those who do it. I know that our German crew has been faithful at it. Your faithfulness. But sometimes, I mean, I know for a while, Suzanne wasn't seeing much in the way of results. You just keep at it. You don't give up. Right when you're ready to give up, you're also ready to give great abundance. Great fruit is about to happen.
Always darkest, just before the dawn. Don't all let the darkness push you around.
And remember, too, as far as all of this gratitude and tithing, everything else, who owns it all anyway?
God.
God. You got to be really clear in your thought. You own nothing. We go through motions. You think you own your house or you own your children or whatever, and you think you own. Ultimately, you do not.
I was well into adulthood before that dawned on me. But I am very grateful for that.
Yeah, it all belongs to God.
Well, and when it dawns on you, when you realize it, it's a huge liberating thought, isn't it? Because it lifts the burden of responsibility off of your shoulders, where it belongs, in God's hands.
It's a humbling reality.
Yes. And it also, with everything you own, you should take, how should you treat it?
Care for it. Cherish it.
Yes.
Like it's God.
You treat it like
yes.
It's
God.
Great gratitude that God has provided it for you.
That includes your body. That includes your car, your children, your home, your business, anything you have anything to do. It belongs to God, and you should treat it with seeing it as belonging to God, with great reverence, respect, gratitude. You don't trash it. You know, we had some condo in Florida once, and we didn't own it for very long. But anyway, people would come. We mainly rented it out. We didn't actually get much time to go there often. But when we rented it out, guess what would happen?
We mistreated.
Yeah, they abused it. They didn't own it. I mean, why is that? If you ever go anywhere, that place should be more beautiful than before you went. Because you don't own it doesn't mean you get the carpets dirty and do all that kind of thing. What kind of thought is that? It's a piggish, whinish thought. So,
on the other hand, members of this church would sometimes in the summer rent a place at the Jersey Shore to go for a few days. And we would go, and it would be a great refreshment. We would also conduct our classes there. And we always started by going through whatever house we were renting and seeing what needed to be cleaned. We were vacuuming. We were washing windows. When we left that house, it was better than when we got there.
And people always wanted us, obviously, to rent their place. They got a free cleaning service. It's how we were taught to do it. We wouldn't think of doing anything other than that.
We were grateful for it.
And that comes back on you when you do things like that. It comes back on you and blesses you more.
And you will find people that you do business with treat you with that same courteousness and respect. We're not slaves. We shouldn't be slaves to material things, but we should appreciate them. That way, you're not wasteful. I mean, I go back to Lillian. She has clothes she's had for a long time. She knows how to sew. She fixes them. She makes them just as new as they were 20 years ago.
She looks nice all the time.
And
they look like they're brand new.
Yes, they do. No one would ever know. It's just the way she is. She doesn't have to have something new every other day or week.
There was a period in my life where I couldn't get the stuff that I needed for a while, for one reason or another, and I found out that I really didn't need a lot of what I thought I needed. It was really amazing. I was very comfortable and happy living with that. In fact, a lot of it I don't do now, even though I can, because it's not important to me like I thought it was.
This is again the rules of biblical finance, to absolutely take care of what you have so it does not wax old. You keep it running and lovely.
Another thing that I was taught here was to only keep around what you love, and that was a really big deal in my house because I was keeping stuff that was out of fear of junk and stuff, and I've been getting rid of that.
Thank you. Very true. If you don't love it, if it's not serving some practical purpose, it shouldn't be in your home. You'll feel it. It's like the story of Luann, who had that stuff up in her attic or wherever it was that was very disturbing to her. Even though maybe she wasn't looking at it every day, it was there. It was disturbing. She got rid of it. She burned it. But in other cases, you give it to charity, give it to someone else. You keep what's in your home lovely, orderly. Don't have your closets just trashed or piled high with stuff. Another thing Mrs. Evans would always tell us, Mrs. Evans was a product of the Depression. And she knew how to be very economical. And she would say, with her parents, in their parents' home, they didn't have a lot, but what they had was the best that they could afford. In other words, instead of having six crummy articles of clothing, better to have one that's in better condition, shape. So, Suzanne, tell us about the French.
Oh, yeah, they have really restricted wardrobes. Like, they go always for quality over quantity. So they'll have, they'll save up their money. When the sales come, they'll buy some, you know, maybe one or two pieces of clothing that they'll keep for years, and then they'll mix it in with less expensive clothing, but their wardrobes, their closets are so small compared to what we see here in this country, which is buy, 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 buy. They're very careful with their money because they're raised that way, not to go into debt and to just buy quality and to appreciate the smaller number of pieces of clothing that they have, which I think is a wonderful way to do things. So they don't have piles and piles and piles of stuff that they're giving away because it's getting to be a little bit more that way, but traditionally you buy fewer and better pieces of clothing.
Thank you. Yeah, the Evanses, their furniture, in fact, Mrs. Evans would still have her parents' furniture because they were lovely, and they were the best quality, and so they lasted. This is another way you nickel and dime yourself away. Look at the tail. I'm going to get some cheap thing here. And then you don't even like it.
Yeah.
It doesn't last. It falls apart. You don't even like it. It doesn't even look good or whatever. So better to save your money and get quality than all of this. We have so much cheap stuff available.
And in the long run, that's really the most economical way to acquire what you need. By economical, I mean if you buy quality that is built to last, you'll pay a little bit more for it than if you buy something that's cheaper but is not built to last. And over a 10-year period, if you buy the quality piece, you will spend less money than if you buy the cheap one and have to replace it after 2 or 3 years. And only your spiritual sense can tell you what the right quality, what the right product that is built to last. It doesn't mean you have to buy the most expensive, you know, luxurious whatever. That would be wasteful also.
Yeah, because then you're just paying, it's not even worth what they're charging for it. So you use your divine intelligence, because so many things are so overpriced. So, and then too, you can think about, this all relates back to God and living a godly life. You think about, how much do you really need? I read something I thought rather interesting. It was a prisoner of war person, but he said, if he got one good thing from that experience, it was how little you can do without. And I would guess so, yes.
How little you really need, yeah.
That's why some people like to go camping, too, because you go out, you don't have much, and you do just fine. Really don't need that much. We are trained, with all this advertising and everything, to think we can't live without things, but that's simply not true.
And it's a burden if you buy it, if you accept it. It is a freedom to have less and not have the burden of unnecessary things around you.
So what about the story of the talents? What did we learn with that? And both Jeremy and Florence wrote about it. Jeremy, you want
to? That third person. I was really thinking about that third person who didn't make anything back and just buried it. You know, he obviously thought that it was a trick, or, you know, wanted to see him fail or something like that, and that's just not the way it is. It's just such a blessing to be here and see that that God is not unreasonable or oppressive. He's nothing to fear. He just wants all good stuff.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting take on this, because if you have this negative expectation and you think people are out to get you, you will experience that kind of thing in your life. People will end up seeming to be out to get you, and you will lack, because it's in your own thought. You will externalize it.
And it's also not true. He talks about, you know, how he reaps what he doesn't sow, but he gave the talent, that's the story, you know.
Well, he didn't acknowledge that what the guy reaps comes from God. In other words, he personalized the whole thing. He materialized the whole thing. And the word talent, as used here, is not a play on words. But one interpretation of this is, we all have talents that are given to us of God. We all have things that we are good at that we can do. And if we hide those talents and refuse to use them in God's service to benefit mankind, what's going to happen to those talents? They're going to get rusty and just kind of languish, but if we use those talents to do what God has in store for us to do, if we give of ourselves, give of our talents, they're gonna become really good. You're gonna become really talented at what you're doing for mankind. You're gonna benefit a lot of people as well as yourself, because that can't help but benefit you.
Very important point, and it would be another way you could be wasteful. Why you were in poverty? You have talents that you could use, and you're just not using them. You have every excuse not to. I think Florence wrote about that. And you're listening to that wrong voice. You can't do it. You're no good. All of that, rather than the voice of spirit, of substance. That, well, you can't, but God can. These are the way people fall into poverty and despair, listening to that wrong voice and not seeing that their substance is all from God. So, well, and the other, I think that story, you know, to me, to some degree, is about hoarding, you know, not wanting to give of what you have. Hoarding is ungodlike.
The fearful sense that makes them do that, that attachment. It's as if what the thing is giving you security. And when you watch some of these shows, the episodes on hoarding, for example, it shows how terrified these people are when, the cleaning people come to take things away. I mean, so much, and yet they're afraid to even let go of the little something that has been up in the kitchen for how long. It's just a fearful scene.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. It's a fear that there isn't enough to go around. That God won't provide what I need. I mean, really, it's a sin against God, isn't it?
Very godless.
A very limited view. The last thing we're going to read today, Gary will read it from Martha Wilcox about our viewpoint. Because when your viewpoint is so limited, then you will seem to experience that limitation. I heard someone recently talking about our resources as a nation and as a world. I mean, even on a human level, we have an incredible amount of natural resources. Probably an inexhaustible supply, because why would God not give us that? So what is the problem? What chokes it?
Selfishness, greed, all of that, taking from others what they have and not sharing it or making sure that everyone is blessed by what's been given.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the basis of that, isn't it, is the fear that somehow if we could lose what we have.
It's not enough.
Yeah, fear that someday there won't be enough.
And you look at those stories in the Bible, they always had enough, whatever, from the prophets. If they needed water, they had water. If they needed manna from heaven, they had manna from heaven. If they needed loaves and fishes, they had that.
Well, look at Jesus' life. I mean, he just moved around all the time, and he never worried about what he was going to eat or what he was going to drink.
No, because he moved where God moved him to, and God provided for him. God does the same for each one of us. If we are moving as God moves us, we will have what we need.
Such an example of true freedom, Jesus, the way he lived.
Yes. That is the ultimate freedom, isn't it?
So today, after this class, you think about how you can demonstrate the true sense of supply better, and what areas, or in what areas are you afraid? Are you afraid of not having enough? And how you can learn to trust God more and to trust the laws and rules of the universe that will be operating on your behalf if you operate them. But those who give freely, ye have received, freely give. And it is certainly right for those who have more to give those who at this point seem to have less. Eventually they will have more too, because it's available for everyone. But maybe at this point they don't see it. Betty said that poverty was no more to be tolerated than is sin, disease, and death. And certainly when I first came to this church, I thought, well, you got help with sickness and that kind of thing, but I never thought about it for supply.
But really, it's every bit a sickness as a flu. Believe that you lack something that you like.
But, like everything else, it is not something you go out seeking. Because, in this week's lesson, Jesus said, "For all these things do the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knoweth that ye have need of these things. But rather what? What do we seek?
Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all things else shall be added unto you."
Yes.
And what is the kingdom of heaven that we should seek?
Right living, right thought, love.
Yeah, we should be seeking the true substance of things. We should be seeking to love more, to know more of the truth.
Love and know God more, and our fellow man. Two great commandments. That's what we see. As we seek,
and God is love.
As we seek that, all is added unto us. It's a byproduct. But you can't fake it. You cannot fake it. It's got to be from the depths of your being. Or it won't work. God is not mocked. So, and that's why, too, it says that God loves a cheerful giver. Because he knows. He knows if you're doing it begrudgingly, because you have to, or because somebody's telling you to, or whether it's from your heart, your motive. And there's the rub, my friend, because no one can fake it. So.
And that's what it means when Paul says to the Corinthians, "He which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully."
So think about all this. Think about your substance, because part of substance is supply. It's also our spirit, what our real substance is. As Linda started out saying, are you a person of substance? Do you have that God that is behind everything you say and do? Is it God-inspired? So we'll end now with Martha Wilcox, our practice governed by our viewpoint.
Spiritual vision. The patriarchs and prophets based their mental position on spiritual vision. What to others at that time seemed to be ordinary human conditions and events, these men interpreted according to spiritual vision, and placed upon the conditions and events an entirely different value than was placed upon them by the mind that was unenlightened spiritually. These men lived life and practiced life based upon their spiritual vision of men and things, with the result that they exercised spiritual power. They brought water from the rock. They fed the hungry with barley loaves and corn. And they raised the dead. They gave proof or evidence of their spiritual power. Each one of us is living his life today according to an incorrect viewpoint based on material sense, or according to a correct viewpoint based on divine science. All the seeming troubles and inharmonies in the world today result from incorrect viewpoints. And we have these wrong viewpoints because we base our interpretations of everybody and everything upon the beliefs of material sense. Wrong interpretation always results in a wrong viewpoint. Do we interpret man as personal and material, as mortal? Do we interpret the world in which we live as material and destructible? If we do, we are interpreting them erroneously and are living our life from a limited viewpoint of material sense. There is nothing wrong with our world or with the people living in our world. It is our mental interpretation that is erroneous and causes us to think and act from incorrect viewpoints. As we exercise our thought and action from a viewpoint based upon the interpretation as given in divine science, this new age will be for us an age of power and action and dominion and good works. It will be an age in which we as individuals give instantaneous proof or evidence of perfect man and perfect universe at hand.
Thank you. Okay, that's the truth. We'll go out and live it, and we're going to have a service that will heal the world. Thank you all.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you too.